welcome back to TYT, members only post game. All right, so during the break, we just talked a little bit about a topic that I think we can elaborate on a little bit for our members. So this, okay, let me give you the full context of the conversation. That way you guys, you know where we're coming from. So Ben gets criticized a lot because he is not known to respond to messages, right? And look, I've known Ben for a while, and I remember when I initially heard these criticisms, I'd be like, yeah, man, that's fucked up. Like, why doesn't he respond? Like, you should. You should totally respond, man. Super irresponsible.
Is that how you talk back?
Yeah.
That's young Anna.
And now that I'm older and I understand like the pressures of life and all that, I totally get it now. And I don't know if you feel this way, Ben or Kim, but for me, there's always at least a little bit of guilt that I feel every day because I didn't get back to someone.
Totally, yeah, I feel it all the time.
Yeah, or I'll see that someone messaged me on Facebook, for instance, which is my least favorite way of getting messaged.
So and you don't talk to John Iderola then?
I'll ignore, John only messages on Facebook. But why? Why does he like Facebook
so
much?
He doesn't text, he loves Facebook Messenger.
Okay, so look, to be fair to him, I called him out on that once and now he only texts me because he knows I hate being messaged on Facebook. But like, sometimes I'll see the message and I'll see who it's from. It's from someone I like, I want to hear from them. But like, it's the pressure of having to respond to that message that I hate. So like, sometimes I just won't even like read it because if you click on it, it's gonna show that you read it, and then if you don't respond, you're a dick.
Texting. I'm not on Facebook really, and so those types of messages are not conducive to people like me, people with my sort of procrastinating personality. And I don't think of myself as a procrastinator. I know in the end that I am one, but I don't think, I'll just do that later, I'm lazy. You know, like, I mean, I've never been busier. The last 2 years have been by far and away the busiest years of my life. By times 10, I went from not being that busy to being incredibly busy. And then you have a family. So when I see a text and it's gonna be the beginning, I can't respond yep or LOL or haha or something that requires. So I might see it, like I might glance at my phone in the middle of a conversation while I'm with my wife or at dinner, but I can't then go, hang on, I just have to spend 2.5 minutes texting with Michael.
Yeah.
Back and forth.
Well, I mean, you could respond later, right?
Right.
That's
but
what I do.
By the time later happens, then I forgot.
Yes.
And that's not because I'm a bad guy, but then I've moved on to something else and I don't have it in me. Oh, I have it in me, like I guess I'm capable of it, but I don't naturally think, oh, I gotta get back to those texts. So I will frequently see the next day, oh, I never got back to so and so, and it's not somebody I'm that close to. They probably think I'm a jerk, and then I feel bad.
Yeah, and that guilt is the worst. And I have situations like that often.
I don't think it's cool to, in the middle of a conversation, say, hang on a sec.
I totally agree.
I just don't like it. I don't like it. I know people do it. I don't like it.
I've done that to my boyfriend before and he gets pretty irate, so I've stopped doing it.
Yeah, right. I get mad, and I'm on my phone more than my wife's on my phone. There's no question, it's not close. But when we go on a drive together in a car, either for a long trip or a short trip, even if like we had to go to dinner in another city far away from Los Angeles called Los Feliz.
That's a city.
I mean, it's like you drive an hour on a Saturday and you're like, what city are we in? Oh, we're still in Los Angeles, I got it. And I was kind of looking forward to the drive because it was just me and her and like we were gonna listen to music really loud and she's on her phone because she's been with the kid all day and she's got some stuff she wants to take care of and I get it. But I'm like, come on! Like this is where we're supposed to like hang out but I can't say it because there's no question who the bigger violator in our marriage is of that and it's me.
Yeah, it's the worst. And like I have similar issues. So Christian and I, like especially when we first started dating, he worked at a restaurant and so when I would go visit him.
You're probably terrible at that too.
He's not.
No, I'm kidding.
Christian's actually.
Oh, it's just time to insult him again.
Man. You better watch it. He's coming in today.
No, he's awesome at everything. You know, I love Preston.
Yeah. Except, you know, he's not the greatest athlete, so.
No, he is the greatest athlete.
He said Christian's a great athlete, like among average people or something.
No, among people who aren't professional athletes.
He's great among those of us who suck.
No, he's great among those of us who are good but aren't professional. Never mind.
Okay, enough about that. Right. No, but we would always notice that couples would come into his restaurant and they wouldn't talk to each other. They were just, each one was on their phone and in their own world. And so we like had this, we didn't sign a contract or anything, but we kind of had an agreement that we wouldn't let ourselves fall into that pattern. And so we don't. And when I go out to dinner with people, my phone's in my purse.
Right.
And I'm having a conversation. Because even if I look down and check my phone for half a second, I feel so guilty doing that, right?
I did it a couple nights ago while we were at that dinner. But I was looking stuff up. But I hear you. You're right. It's better not to.
And so, like, there's all this pressure to constantly be plugged in, constantly communicate with people, constantly respond. And then also constantly document every great, fun thing that's happening in your life. And so I'll give you an example. Christian and I went to a camping trip a couple weekends ago. And as we were there, I'm like, oh, this is a good opportunity to take some pictures for social media, right? But I don't want to fucking take pictures for social media. Like, I mean, Christian took a couple and I took them from him and I posted one on Instagram. But I just want to live in the moment and I want to enjoy it. But that also comes at a cost, right? There's so much potential in your career if you have a big following. Mm-hmm. And in order to have a big following, you have to be super active. You got to post every day and you got to like.
You got to do the stories and the.
It is so
across
much.
Platforms.
And it's also, there's something also a little creepy about it, right? Like, why do you guys want to know what I'm doing all day long?
So you have to sell stories on Instagram, because if I'm going to do Instagram more. Mm-hmm. I can't just post a picture after.
Drink protein shakes and make sure you take a picture every morning as you're drinking your protein shake.
Right.
And then post said shake picture.
That does sound.
That tea that makes you poop.
So the I did it on Twitter, 3 weeks ago my daughter.
Yeah.
3 weeks ago my daughter says that she's four. She goes, I can count with any finger. She's like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 1, 2, 3. And so I know what's coming, so I get out my camera. So I can start with this one and go to 5, or I can start with this one and go to 5, or I can start with this one and
click.
Go to 5, right?
Yeah.
So I take pictures, and so I take a bunch. And of course, in one of them, she just has this look on her face. Right? She's not flipping me off. She has no clue what it means.
Yeah.
So I post it on Father's Day.
Uh-huh.
It's fantastic. People love it. It was the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah.
Right. I totally. So I got. I was like, wow. If I had something like that every day, and I'd get some dumb picture, and I get 1,500 likes just for, you know, some stupid picture. It's all a fraud.
Yeah.
She was going 1, 2, 3. Right. But she looks like she's a 4-year-old flipping me off.
Yeah. And like in that case, it's something that it's authentic. It's something that you were genuinely amused by.
Right,
you
wanted
to share it with people, and it wasn't like. It wasn't like a measured, calculated thing that you were doing to increase the number of followers you have.
Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe it was. But I also knew it would be funny. I mean, it might have been. I thought, oh, this will do well. And I mean, I find other pictures and I'm like, But I mean, it's a difference between people will like this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that means it'll do well, which I guess helps your brand too. I mean, it's an argument I have with one of my closest friends who's actually works at Turner Classic Movies. That every action we take is selfish, that there is no such thing as a selfless act.
We're getting into philosophy.
Right, it's that same sort of argument. Even the guy throws himself on the grenade, which was my argument. I'm like, that's pretty selfless. Save your friends, kill yourself. It's so you can have that. It's because you want to be the guy who throws yourself on the grenade. You think that you'll be rewarded for that.
Yeah. People are just shitty all around, you
right,
know?
Right.
Like it's just.
But his point is that we're too tough on it. Like every act is selfish, right?
So I feel like, easy
on us, because that's all we do. We're designed to be selfish.
And by the way,
you see it in children.
I don't begrudge people who understand the game and they play the game to their advantage. They're smart. I'm actually very impressed by people who can be as active on social media as they are and build a following and all that. It's more. what I'm complaining about is more the pressure to do all that, right? And it's like the guilt that we were talking about. The guilt isn't just based on me failing to respond to every person who's trying to communicate with me day in and day out. It's also this guilt that I feel because I feel as if I'm not doing enough.
Right. Sure.
And I can't keep up. I can't do Instagram stories and Instagram posts and then Twitter posts and then Facebook posts. And like, I'm looking at my homie, Dan Rather, and he's killing the game on Facebook. And I'm like, how is Dan Rather killing the game on Facebook? And I suck, right? And it's because I don't have time. And I feel like shit every day.
Have you read Dan Rather's book, The Camera Only Blinks Twice?
No, but I'm going to because
yeah, it's
he
great.
Is
it's really great.
The homie. He's so good.
I find it. It's not easy to find on YouTube, but it's findable of Dan Rather's last broadcast. I had it saved on my first TiVo. Mm-hmm. And I thought that I would be able to save it in some way forever, his final broadcast. You know, because he had that period of time where he signed every broadcast Courage at the end. Dan Rather, CBS News. Good night. Courage.
That's a little weird.
It was totally weird.
Yeah.
It was incredibly, it was a little creepy. It was totally weird. And he stopped doing it after 4 months. And I mean, on Twitter, it wouldn't have lasted a week. But still, he was vilified for it and mocked for it. And he was all, you know, it's Dan. He's a little quirky. Right? So he stopped doing it. And then he continued on for 8 years or whatever. And then on the last night, of course, he then thanked all people, soldiers in harm's way, journalists in harm's way, first responders in harm's way, single mothers forced to raise their families in this. He just listed people who struggle with drugs and trying to come back. I don't remember everything he said, but he just listed sort of everyday heroes in our society. And it wasn't just the military, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, included soldiers in harm's way. But and then he was like, to all of them, you know, it wasn't about me. And he goes, and to all of them and to all of you, courage.
Nice.
Dan Rather, CBS News, good night. And like, weeping. It was the greatest thing. It was the greatest thing ever. It's the greatest sign off I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you love Dan Rather. He is a worthy person to love.
Well, you know, the reason why I love him is because he represents what got me interested in being in the media, being part of all this. Look, there's a lot of criticism geared toward people who have been part of the establishment media or old school journalism. But there was amazing old school journalism that inspired me, and Dan Rather was part of that. So I think that's the reason why I'm just, you know.
Less so on TV now, but certainly in print, there's great, great, great journalism done now. It's print and online every day.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I give the example of, the investigations that Reuters did into drinking water throughout the country, not just in Flint. That is journalism. That is the type of stuff that inspires me, that makes me want to be better at what I do. What I do is not journalism, okay? Journalism is what, you know, the reporters with Reuters did in regard to that story. Like that, going out there and investigating, collecting the news, talking to people, asking the tough questions, going out there on the field. That is the kind of stuff that I really admire.
And politically, you know, every day the New York Times, the Washington Post gets stuff wrong. And every day there is stuff for progressives to find and object to in the paper. The New York Times in particular had a story that was, you know, calling the Sanders wing of the party militants. That's an overstatement. It wasn't quite saying that. I get why that would be objected to. But if you think that gives you cause to marginalize the work being done by journalists at the Washington Post and the New York Times, who are doing some of the best work they've done since Watergate right now, you're a fool. There's great stories every day in those papers, and there's some
that aren't so great
because they're people doing news, and that happens.
Right. Actually, I want to elaborate on that just a little bit before we call it a day. Look, I think that, and I've made this mistake myself a lot in the past, and I think that I've had a lot of humbling experiences lately that have made me kind of approach mainstream media differently. First of all, does mainstream media get it wrong? Yes, every once in a while they get it wrong. And you know, they'll write stories that are unfair to certain groups of people, and they should be criticized for those specific stories. But I now understand that, especially for a big media company or organization, it's not one or two people working there. It's not 10 people working there. It's a lot of people working there, right? And so to essentially criticize the entire publication as being to this or to that is unfair if you're basing it on one article that was written by a couple people. You know what I'm saying?
And how many times have people here at the Young Turks said, you know, you should do this video this way or label it this way because it'll get a lot of hits?
How many people at TYT have said that?
Yeah, or a Facebook video. Do a Facebook video on this because it's the kind of Facebook video that gets hits.
Yeah, that's something that happens.
Happened pretty regularly. It's really not substantively different than write stories that'll please advertisers. Not that it'll make, because it'll make you money, but that's what keeps you in business.
Yeah.
We need clicks to stay in business. They need advertisers to stay in business. It doesn't change the core of who we are, right? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't always change the core of who they are. It may Jenk's overall reaching point about the move to the right and a sort of and recognizing an establishment bias when you see it's a worthy thing to point out and a worthy thing to point out consistently. But calling people who work at the Washington Post and New York Times hacks because you don't like some of their stories is hacky in and of itself.
Right.
A far worse hack than you were accusing them of doing.
Right. And just to make it more personal so you guys see where I'm coming from, you know, I don't want the reporting of others to say anything about me within this company, right? I don't have control over what other people report. So if someone reports something and they do it,
badly,
in a questionable way or badly, it's unfair to like be like, Anna's a hack too. Like, but
that's what people do though.
I know, and it's unfair, and I've done it in the past, you know?
Right.
And so now that I kind of have a better understanding of how things work, as a company grows,
we should all call fewer people hacks. It would benefit us.
Like that is like the criticism of choice in 2016
let's just
and 2017.
Hold off. Not everybody is a hack. Some people have bad days, or you know what? You might be wrong.
Right. And if I fuck up, right? If I fuck up a story and Ben wasn't involved or Kim wasn't involved, I don't want them to get heat for it, right?
I think, won't take it.
Yeah, exactly.
I won't know. So it's okay.
So don't belittle the good work that publications are doing because sometimes they do get it wrong, but I don't think that's indicative of their entire operation. Okay, that's all I wanted to say about that.
Well, journalism has just changed a lot. I mean, as we move into the digital era as well, and it's just, I think people can easily get confused.
Yeah, definitely.
We gotta go.
All right.
Okay.
Bye, guys.
Good night.